Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
Trump's third Supreme Court nominee is testifying before the Senate Judicial Committee this week. Both parties and the media are engaging in the theater and spectacle of the nomination process while the working class suffers. The enshrinement of another pro-capitalist jurist, whom Joe Biden said is a very fine person, is no doubt a blow to every member of the working class, but there isn't really anything immediate that can be done. The eventual outcome, a 6-3 conservative majority, is the culmination of years and years of political calculation. No amount of protesting or other direct action will prevent the appointment. Ideally, voting could be an answer, but under neoliberalism, it's necessary to persuade capital interests before anything changes.
Capital can wait you out when you're protesting, and we're seeing that same thing happening now. Right? Protesting doesn't matter because capital will wait, and they'll do things like convince you to privatize parks or wait till winter happens or all the things that you know capital can do because they're an entity. They're not a real
individual with finite resources.
And so we talk about institutions that are fighting against you and why protesting really is hard for us to sustain is that you have not only the federal government, state governments, local governments fighting against you because they want law and order, right? The idea of the government is they want law and order, not because they care about you or the other citizens. It's because they care about what it looks like when there's not law and order and the fear that they'll lose power when they're perceived as weak. And the second part of all this is that capital as its own entity or its own institution means that you have things from banks. So how can you transfer money to a protest group without having everything tracked? They know who you are, right? So they already have the tracking capability. You have institutions like grocery stores that won't give you milk for the tear gas in your eyes. Shout out to Target. You have the institutions you have to go to work, right? So how do you protest or form the protest during the day if everybody has to work? You can't. There's institutions communication. So how are you supposed to communicate when the cops can come in and jam your radio signals?
Turn your phones off, yeah.
Or Twitter bans accounts that are being used to help rally the troops around. So all these institutions that you might not consider to be hostile are hostile against the movement, and capital is in charge of every single one of them.
With the Supreme Court vacancy currently, a lot of people are protesting the Republican Trump's nominee. But the protesting isn't really going to amount to anything. But it's not because capital is going to wait them out. They're actually doing the opposite, which is slamming through a candidate as quickly as possible. But capital doesn't have a fear of like the time frame of any of this. It's in their best interest to do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, because they don't want any questions asked. They want someone who's going to come in and play ball. And the more you peel back the onion, the harder it is for you to hide all the demons inside. Because once you start digging in and brooding around, you begin to really find out what this person is. And so why capital cares that this person gets through fast is that Roberts, as a 5-4 majority, gets to pick and choose which part of the populist movements he can be part of by deciding when he's a swing vote. He did the LGBT, you know, ruling. He does the healthcare ruling, right? He could do environmental rulings. But 99% of the time, he's going to vote for the ruling class. And it's those smaller rulings that you don't partake in, that you don't see, that you don't, you know, learn about, that are really hurtful to us, where he's given you these major wins, but it's really 1 out of 100. And once they get rid of his ability to be the pivotal vote, that means that the ability to cancel things like Roe versus Wade, or the Clean Water Act, the American Disabilities Act, or even things like cancel the census, which we saw happen, you know, today or yesterday or whatever day it is, even cancel the census, which they're fighting for right now, right? The Trump wants to fight to get rid of their ability to count the census so they can get all of the districts figured out before he leaves office if he gets voted out, right? So there's a reason why having a court's majority is important. And once Robert goes away or his loses that ability to have the majority, he's basically not the populist person anymore. His history goes away. And capital wants that because that means they can get rid of all of the anti-bank legislation and go full pro-bank. They can get rid of the unions. They can get rid of anything they want to at this point in time because they don't have to worry about somebody being a populist they know how they're going to rule. So somebody who has, 30 years on the bench, ruling for capital, ruling against the working class, they know they can count on them when they come all the way to the top.
And that's exactly what this latest round of the Supreme Court is about. They want to reframe the court to be anti-worker, to be pro-capitalist. It's been historically framed as sort of a religious or a big government, little government, but I think it's being reframed as pro-capital. And this idea that a protest will somehow influence the choice of the new justice, it just doesn't make sense. There's nothing that the people can do to influence this. So participating in the theater that is the hearings that have been going on for the last couple days doesn't accomplish anything. We don't often tell you to disengage, but on this topic, you are completely without power, and it does you no good to continue to be stressed out by watching the hearings, by watching whatever talking head is on the TV saying this or that, or saying, I'm going to fight for you, because capital has already won. The protest does nothing in this context, and capital has the ability to push this through as quickly as possible so that protesting does not matter. By design, that's the intent, and that is what will play out. I know we said on a previous episode that we thought the Supreme Court nominee, from a game theory perspective, might be seated after the election. It's looking like they're very adamant about getting a vote before the election. Not really sure if that's just posturing. I don't think anything has fundamentally changed from a game theory perspective. They could do the vote whenever they want, and protesting isn't going to change anything.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a look at the Senate, you're talking about 34 people or 33 people up for election this year. That's less than the number needed to sail this vote through. Right, there's no more filibuster, so one senator can't just hold it up. I mean, it's over with. So, not that we're saying to disengage from all politics and policies, don't waste the energy protesting something you don't have control over, because the fundamental message from every one of our podcasts has been, you have control over a local. So you might want to find out who the local judges are that you're voting for, and which has aligned themselves to the prosecutor to put minorities behind bars. Like, that's a real thing. Find out which county commissioner wants to roll back funding for your parks or to keep funding golf courses which only serve one class. Or you might want to find out which water person or inspectors or whoever it is locally that you can fight for. So take the time that you would spend protesting and move it to an energy somewhere else. There was a senator that came out and said that it's a sham and you should call your senator. Calling your senator doesn't do shit, because most of them aren't up for re-election, and in 2 years, nobody's voting somebody out because how they voted for the Supreme Court nominee. That's not a ticket item. The economy is a ticket item most of the time. How they acted in office or what legislation they brought up for their state or how much money they brought back in pork barrel spending, which isn't really a thing anymore, but still there. How many jobs they quote unquote create, all that stuff. Those are real things that people vote for. No one's going to remember 2 years ago you slammed through a Supreme Court nominee. Nobody does that. So, I mean, when was the last time you voted somebody out because they didn't vote the way a judge that you wanted in office, right? You don't know. Nobody here knows a bad judge that came through the last, 20 years. I mean, I can name off the Supreme Court, but do you know the Court of Appeals? No. I mean, Kamala brought it up the other day in the debate, but, nobody here knows that because it's nothing you can affect. What you can affect is local, and that's where you should put all your energy.
And even if you're supposing that once Biden wins, is he going to pack the court? No, nothing's going to change.
No. Should he pack the court, though?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he should pack. Here's a rant. Ready? If you own the Senate and you own the House and you own the presidency, you should 100% pack the court. Expand it to 105. It doesn't matter the number, as long as it's kind of odd.
Or one.
It doesn't matter. Just pack the court. Make it one. It truly doesn't matter. Put in the youngest person. Make it 15. Pack it full of a bunch of leftists. This is what happens if I owned it, right? If I own this, what would I do? Expand it to, 27. I don't care. Pack it full of leftists. And then immediately move it back down to 9 and have to remove all the conservative judges who don't make the cut to reconfirm them. Now they're gone. So who cares about packing the court? Anybody that has an actual, thing they fight for, an actual visceral need that they're fighting for, should care that the court is being packed with a liberal person. I don't know. There's a list of people that should care. Environmentalists should care. You should pack the court 100%. You should support it every day of the week because that means that the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, all these things you care about, animal rights, they all sail through the court in a positive way that take away capital's power. If you're Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, guess what? You get to have a court that'll side with you that you should be a state or Guam or any of the other territories that we still hold hostage. If you are pro-choice, and not just pro-choice, the fact that abortion should be a federal right, but also the ability that we should fund things like Planned Parenthood, you should still fight for packing the courts. If you want anti-discrimination laws in the housing and workplace, you should pack the courts. If you want law and order, if you really care about cutting police violence down and cutting and increasing their accountability. And just cutting and defunding the police, you should pack the courts because that's the only people that can rein them in. So pack the courts no matter what it is. Again, if I was running in one, that's exactly what I would do.
And we're not talking about just packing the Supreme Court. We're talking about packing federal courts, state courts, any court that can be ideologically shifted as a result of an elected official coming into power. The Republicans have been doing this for years and nobody has cared. So this is a little bit projection on their part. Oh, you guys can't pack the courts. That's our thing. We've been doing that forever successfully. And the other thing is that once Biden's president, he has the Senate, he should make it just one justice and name it Hillary to own the Trump supporters, right?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, that would also mean though. Here's the other issue, and we talked about this previously. Biden would have to not be neoliberal for this to work. He would absolutely have to defang Capitol in order for him to be able to push through the Senate and the House to pass all the laws that he had. And the only way to do that is to basically go at the populist movement or go to the bully pulpit and bully them, call them names. Rattle the trees, pull out all the skeletons, and threaten every member of Congress and the Senate that he will expose every bit of corruption that they have because he knows it all, unless they vote for him. Now, is it legal or illegal? I don't care.
It doesn't matter because Trump's proven that it doesn't matter whether it's legal or not.
Yeah, just do it. This is all conjecture and happy-go-lucky feeling, but here's what you can do if you're local and you feel like getting active. You can if you get voted to the your local level, so that's the school board or the your city council. You could change the rules of your city council if you have the majority to have as many people as you want to. You can change your small town to have wards, so there's no more at-large representation, which means that you actually have hyper local representation. So someone from your basically your block from your precinct that represents you instead of being at large where capital wins because they have the money to push through the top four candidates, top five candidates, you are then allowed to say someone from my neighborhood is who will go up. And that's the important part about wards and the important part about actually having elected officials because you no longer have the at large that can bully their way around town.
Yeah, you go from a city council of 5 people to a city council of 35 people, and suddenly it's a lot more difficult for special interests to go up and buy, what would it be, 18 seats to have a majority, whereas they'd only need to buy 3 seats previously.
That's right. And a lot more people will get active. And as soon as you expand this, here's the secret. As soon as you expand that, you get to a city council pick the individuals, unless there's a special election called that fill those seats. So now you get to actually select the individuals who come in and fill those spots. So you say, hey, we're going to expand it to 35 people. Oh, great. I get to pick the people that I want to fill it. And now they are incumbents. And now you've completely changed the local, landscape. Take a town of 90,000 people and totally upend all of the politics there.
So we've talked a lot about interacting at the local level, but the federal level is also important because it bestows national rights. And one of the major rights that we've talked about is Roe versus Wade, the right of a female to have an abortion if she so chooses. So this issue of Roe versus Wade has been kind of this carrot of a decision that the conservatives have long talked about overturning. And they've had the ability to do so at the federal level many times over the last 60, 70, 80 years, however long it's been since the ruling came into force. And they haven't. So why is that?
my theory is that they don't actually want to overturn it, but they want to use it as a wedge issue. And I think we've historically seen the Supreme Court act as sort of this small government with religious overtones kind of setup, where Roe versus Wade is an integral part of kind of the presentation of what the Supreme Court should be about. But I think now that it's going to be 6-3, I think it's not really relevant anymore. It's how can we screw over workers? And Roe versus Wade doesn't really contribute to screwing over workers or capital or making money for large corporations. So they're not going to touch on it. It's not consequential to capital's interests anymore.
It's really not. And so the ruse is almost over, because once the right loses what they're fighting for, like the right doesn't really care about unions. The right doesn't really care about environmental policies. Oh, rolling back regulations. Nobody gives a shit about that. That's a big business handout. There's not one person that I've talked to, maybe a couple of psychopaths, that say that all these regulations are killing small businesses. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're KFC and you want to dump your grease down the drain, yeah, I guess it makes you lose $200 every 6 months that you have to fucking call the pump truck up to come pump out your grease. But it's not really killing your job, because you just jack the price up of your fucking shitty chicken so that people can, eat it. So once they lose this wedge issue, the only thing they have left is guns. And that really has been taken off the table since Obama, because Obama was so afraid to actually challenge it because it was such a divisive issue. Once the right loses their ability to actually have something to coalesce around and fight, it actually might be harmful to their movement.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of infrastructure built around the religious right and how Roe versus Wade is important. But I don't think the powers that be in the federal government care at all about it, because it does not make anybody money. Like, there's no capital interest, there's no profit motive in either preserving Roe versus Wade or not. They don't care. And I think it's reached a point where the Republican base is just so psychotic and without actual, like, moral policy positions that, like, they just don't even care whether their policy makes sense anymore. So you can just have their god emperor Trump say that Roe versus Wade doesn't matter because I paid for an abortion. It's fine.
Yeah, one of the weird things that came out of the ACA was that there was this all this noise made about Roe versus Wade or banning federal money for abortions, but that's already been banned. Like, you can't use federal money for abortion. So it's already pretty much banned at the federal level for using federal taxpayer money for it. But what isn't banned right now is the right to choose at the state level. And I think what they're trying to get to is A, the psychotic people are trying to overturn the federal right for an abortion, which then dictates what the states can do. So that's always been a state rights issue. But I think what's going to come down, and this is where it gets a little bit dangerous, is passing some sort of law that says that fetuses are humans. Now, that'll probably never pass, because it's just such an insane place to be, but that'll be the next fight. Once Roe versus Wade is overturned, their next fight is going to be fetal life, that the life starts at the heartbeat or something so psychotic it makes no fucking sense. And that'll be the next fight.
Do you think that the Supreme Court will overturn Roe versus Wade in the next, I don't know, let's say 5-year period?
I don't actually know what's coming down the pike on cases. They might already have one queued up they might queue one up every year in the federal appeals level or something, just to have one ready. But just like the union stuff, I don't really know what they have sitting at each one of the dockets sitting around to appeal. They just waiting for this to happen so they pull the trigger on 17, Roe versus Wade bills. There's like, 20-something states that are suing to get Roe versus Wade overturned because they can have more restrictions on abortion. I mean, it's, I don't know. I have a feeling that within 2 years from now, we're going to have something on a docket. Now, the Supreme Court may want to wait it out past the second election, past the midterms, just to protect the base. I would probably announce it September, August of 2022 is probably when I would announce that it was coming through, just to get the base riled up, if it was me politically speaking. Before the midterms, yeah.
So you also run the risk, if you're the Supreme Court with a 6-3 majority and you wipe out Roe versus Wade, the Dems, if they control all three branches, they just pass federal law that says abortions are legal. The Supreme Court's totally handcuffed, right?
Because it's a law and there's nothing they can do about it.
Right.
There is no federal law that protects abortion. The only reason that Roe versus Wade exists is because someone tried to get an abortion and was prevented to, and it was said that this is a right that you have. But the Supreme Court can then rule that you no longer have that right. if they want to. But as long as it becomes a law, nobody can really challenge it because it's a law. How it's executed potentially could be challenged. But once it becomes a law, then the Dems could do things like allow federal money for it.
But I think there's real opportunity for a Dem-controlled government to kind of put an end to the current Roe versus Wade kind of struggle session if the Supreme Court sort of oversteps their kind of historically cultural position of just leaving it be.
Why not just threaten to pack the courts and then immediately day one say, we're ending the filibuster to pack the courts, one. Two, we're going to make it federally allowed to have a union. Here's all the things you overturn that we're going to pack the court with. And the Roe versus Wade, the union stuff, the environmental stuff. If you have all three branches, why not use it? Just, and again, they're not going to. Go completely hard left, pass a bunch of laws that they've already overturned, and restore rights.
And maybe a less extreme example of this would be, if you have the executive and you have Congress, you can pass whatever laws you want to sort of override or neuter whatever the Supreme Court might do.
Yep.
And so you don't even necessarily have to pack the courts. You just have the ability to overturn or correct whatever rulings they might take up that are severely partisan or not really within the best interest of some concept of good government.
You just have to be willing to actually fight for the worker and will do what's best and not fight for capital. Beyond packing the courts, one thing that I really, really want, hopefully this ACB, the great ACB, gets packed. I don't even know her name, but I just know her.
Her gangster initials.
Yeah.
Sorry, gangsta.
Hey, gangs, ACB. I really just wish somebody would go to the Supreme Court docket and just fucking dunk on everybody and just say, you know, like, Judge Roberts stole the election for Bush, literally stole the election for Bush. Clarence Thomas, who apparently stuck a Coke can in his ass and pulled out a pube or something and gave it to Anita Hill. The rapist, Judge Kavanaugh, and then you psychopath who lived in the cult house. How are you guys all doing today? Or I present my opening arguments.
You're suggesting just a like-for-like response. Throw their terrible behavior right back at them. Don't give them the honor and prestige that the office allegedly bestows. Like, instead of saying Mr. President, we could say Mr. War Criminal, because every president is a war criminal.
ACB actually wrote in a legal ruling that the N-word did not constitute hostility in a workplace. So, long story short, someone was fired because they brought up the fact that the hostile workplace, and they ruled that I forgot what state it was in. It doesn't matter what state.
I think it was Illinois.
Yeah, it was the Illinois Transportation. Yeah. He couldn't prove that it was a hostile workplace just because his boss called him the N-word, which is completely insane. So one of the people, and we talked about this earlier about having the culture war, one of the people that the Republicans are pushing forward is basically a bigot. I mean, they already have a rapist, now they have a bigot who will fight at tooth and nail to destroy the worker. Because every one of these rulings is a proxy for the union. Every single one of these rulings is a proxy for the worker.
Yeah, so it was a 3-0 unanimous decision. ACB wrote the opinion, and the other two consenting judgments were by two 80-year-old white guys that Reagan appointed. And, I mean, it on its surface, just reading the text, it's an absolutely sort of insane conclusion to draw. I'm not super well-versed in what the actual legal arguments were of the case and whether... Now, there were some extenuating circumstances that made this the correct ruling from some weird point of view. But like the point stands that she wrote an opinion that took the position that your boss saying the N-word could not be construed as a hostile workplace. Like, it's just bananas.
It's so crazy. How can you argue in not even 30 years ago? We're talking about this is more recent than...
It was last year.
That the N-word is not derogatory, that it's not hostile workplace.
Even Kavanaugh in 2013 said that one usage was enough to constitute a hostile workplace.
We'll keep saying this. The right uses things like Roe versus Wade and conservatism as a proxy to fight the worker. Because they're going to bring in these religious nuts, and she did live in a religious cult house for, 5 years or some insane amount of time, to fight their fights for them because they've wrapped themselves around religion and they hold them so close that you can't separate them. Because the idea that you're better than somebody else is wrapped in the idea that capital should manifest itself by holding more wealth than you. Those two things go hand in hand. Even though Jesus was a communist, capital wants churches and makes you believe, you know, that together we should fight the social war, social justice warriors together.
So a lot of these kind of wedge issues are really just proxy issues to signal to capital that you're willing to sell out the collective well-being in the pursuit of profit and capital interests.
Yep.
Roe versus Wade is an example of this. You're going to start to see it happen more and more and more in workplace-related rulings that just absolutely destroy worker rights. Unions, as it stand, don't really have as much power as they did years and years ago. And that's been a concerted effort by the right and the religious right to impede worker rights.
And they're going to do it over and over again, and they find all these smaller, you know, issues. They're gonna fight you on these small little environmental rules that actually have big, you know, impact on you, right? That, you know, one of the things Roberts wrote on were like, you know, third or tertiary streams filling a river, you know, aren't considered to be protected because they're not part of the original clause, even though they are, which means you could pollute the streams that feed the rivers. They're not protected. So these small little rulings that, you know, might come up to be nothing are actually really big because capital has found ways to kill you by 1,000 paper cuts. So every one of these small, you know, social justice fights that the right does is designed by capital to kill off the worker and any power that it might have.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.